T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Here we go!
Afternoons on the Score.
You don't have any problems philosophically betting against your team that I remember, do you?
No, never.
The Reds are -113 tonight with Sonny Gray going against the Cubs. Kyle Hendricks struggled against the Reds a lot last year.
Suarez is on the move. Here's a swing and a high fly ball to right center. It is deep. That is all the way back, and it is gone for a 2-run home run for Mike Moustakas.
I'm inclined to play Sonny Gray tonight, -113 on our site.
Do what you want. It's mostly your money anyway.
It's done.
It's done.
Okay.
Punched it in.
Senzel swings and hits one to deep left, and this is gone. And it is now Cincinnati 9, Cubs nothing in the fifth.
The White Sox are favored tonight against Zach Plesac and the Indians. The White Sox are -124.
Luis Robert. Robert up the middle into center field. That's a base hit. Abreu scores. Golan's on his way home. It is 4-0 Sox.
We've got the Reds for $50.
The Reds hold on to beat the Cubs by a score of 12-7.
Ka-shingo! I made money on it.
And we've got 60 to win 50-ish on the White Sox as well.
And that will do it. And the Sox take the finale to big smiles from T.A.
Kapowza! I made money on that too.
Shellfish Tower.
Yes. We gotta eat, man.
Everybody's gonna eat!
That's how you do it.
The tower! Rapunzel!
Shellfish Tower.
Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
McNeil and Parkin's take 2. How's the pool, Mac?
Everything is good here, Danny. You know, I noticed this earlier, and I failed to mention it. I heard that echo on Shellfish Tower when I said it yesterday. How does something like that happen? That wasn't the magic of the metal shop, was it, Chris Tannehill?
No, that was my guy, Nat Sound. I just kept it in there because I thought it was so funny, because you get the echo from Shep's line when you say it, because he's on like a little bit of a delay.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah,
it was Lucy?
Yeah, so I just kept it in there because the Shellfish Tower deserves
yes,
all the echo.
Yes, it does. It was perfect. I thought it was perfect when it happened. So that's Luce. Hello, Luce. How you doing? We've been working hard tonight too, Lucy. That's from our movie, Danny Tenney, and I share that one. You're not a member of Clockwork Orange just yet. Maybe one day you will.
I feel so excluded.
Yeah, well, you'd like it. It's weird. It's, you know, you have to watch it a few times to pick up on some of the lingo because it's very jargony. But it's delightfully dark. It's very, very funny. It was made in 1973, futuristic in 1973, directed by Stanley Kubrick. A real tough call for me, which is my favorite Kubrick. It's either that one or The Shining. Real difficult. Both deliciously dark. Yeah, we were here before. We did this a little while ago, and then we sent it to Cincinnati for Cubs pregame. And they give it back to us because it's just pouring rain and it doesn't look like it's letting up. Everybody is wondering what the hell are the Reds doing holding on to this thing for, because most maps show that area being covered in precipitation until 11 o'clock tonight.
It's a deluge, Mac. I think that's what a meteorologist would say. Just a constant drought of rain all times. Anthony Rizzo.
A drought of rain.
A drought of rain.
Here we go. So glad we came back on.
Oh, this is the good stuff. This is what they line up for.
They
a deluge, a drought of rain.
What was I looking for there instead of drought? An onslaught of rain?
That would work.
An avalanche of rain? Rain doesn't avalanche. What does rain do when it pours?
Bet you didn't line up to hear this one.
Anthony Rizzo tweeting, "Hey, at Reds, when do you think the window is? Asking for some friends. Maybe check at Home Depot for one." It's just a screenshot of the greater Cincinnati area covered in orange and red meteorology.
Yeah, I was very happy to see Muncie, Indiana, where I went to college on that radar shot. Just look up to the upper left-hand corner. There you find us. We're only about an hour and a half maybe from Cincinnati. That's why I wound up going to Cubs and Reds games or Reds games against whomever. When I was at school the last couple of years, I stayed there during the summer months, and it was always fun to just had a friend who was from Lawrenceburg, Indiana, just across the river from Cincinnati, and his parents had seasons for both the Reds and the Bengals. So it was a way to see professional baseball up close and personal, only being an hour away as opposed to driving 4 hours to Chicago.
Have you been to Great American Ballpark?
No, I have not. I've only been to the riverfront. I hear good things about Great American Ballpark.
Yeah, me too. Tanny, have you ever done that in your travels?
Oh, we have. Let me tell you something about the Great American Ballpark. One of the best, and Danny, you can attest to this, the best in-stadium team halls of fame, because they've got a great one in Kansas City.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, but the one dedicated to the Reds, which they have a long history, obviously, they've got a great team hall of fame there. But I will say this, if you attend a game at Great American Ballpark, be sure to go to a night game, because there is no shade to be found during day baseball in Cincinnati. Mm. It was a rough go.
And
it gets
pro
really
tip.
Hot. Yeah, that is a very pro tip, yeah.
How many stadiums have you been to at this point?
I think 19.
That's a good number, man.
That's way more than I've been to.
Yeah, me as well. I mean, I never loved your game enough to make it like my vacation.
We know.
Purpose of seeing road stadiums exclusively, but it was always like a nice thing to do for a day if by happenstance. Like, been to Coors Field a couple times, hanging out in Denver. Oh, let's go to a Rockies game. It's a beautiful stadium, cool place to see a game. But the expressed purpose of the trip being seeing the new stadiums, I've never done the ballpark tour. How many have you been to, Mac? Do you know?
I bet it's probably single digits, probably 9 or maybe 10. Trips that I made just to go, well, with ballparks being a big part of the trip, only a handful of them. Seattle, and I love Seattle anyway, but I did wind up going to a couple games over a weekend series, Sox and Mariners. Did it in 2000, did it again in 2005. And I think Baltimore falls into the same category. The ballpark wasn't really that new, but went there in the early part of the aughts. Did Minnesota as well. Have not been to the new ballpark in Minnesota. I guess it's not so new anymore. What is Target Field in year 5 already for the Twins, I think?
Longer than that. Right. Yeah, I was there in 2012.
Wow.
Yeah, so maybe 2010 they opened.
Wow.
I feel like, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I have yet to go. I was going to go last. Remember, Charchian was hosting me, and he said, "You want to go see the White Sox? They're in town."
The Sox. I drive past it every day.
I drive right by it, and I'm seldom tempted to stop. So we wound up going to watch the Thoroughbreds race that night instead of going to see the White Sox and Twins, and then I was fishing the next day.
That's a good trip, and that's the right choice for you and your interests. But I have no idea if they'll get this game in. But this is another just weird little auxiliary piece of trying to play sports through a pandemic. There is a lot less tolerance for pesky rain raining out a baseball game, right? Like they're going to do everything they possibly can to get it in. Neither team has an off day tomorrow. They don't play each other again for a little while. They have a mutual off day, but it's not until August 10th. They might need that later if there is an outbreak for either of these teams as it relates to the virus. So they might start this game at 10 o'clock at night if they have to. It wouldn't surprise me.
Okay, well, I'll be watching it tomorrow morning then, if that's the case, and fast-forwarding through all the commercials.
Yeah, I well, that's the beauty of setting up the recorded app. You know what I mean? Just always do it. I'm with you. I will not be up until 1 a.m., even though it is worth 2.7, Mac. I don't know if you heard.
Well, and we've got $50 on the Cubs tonight, which is a risky play because, you know, like Hendricks last night, part of my thinking on betting Cincinnati last night, because Hendricks wasn't real good against them a year ago, Darvish did not exactly sparkle against Cincinnati last year either. And I think he had three starts and accrued an earned average of 4.60 or something like that. Wasn't spectacular in the opener. Maybe he'll bounce back tonight. Let me back you up a little bit to the Anthony Rizzo tweet, wondering why in the world they're waiting for this thing. I don't, you know, I think I follow Anthony Rizzo on Twitter. I probably do, but I don't spend a ton of time on Twitter, and this might be the first time I've actually gone and looked at something an athlete has tweeted and read replies from anybody and everybody who want to get a word in on that. Do you suppose there's a high percentage of guys who read the replies they get to those? Because it's like, wow, these guys, and they have way more followers than clowns like you and I do, because they're jockos and everybody loves jocks, even though they don't always have anything interesting to say. But, man, some of the replies, some of the nasty replies to him anonymously through keyboard muscles were quite jarring.
What stood out to you? Because my experience is, yes, they read their mentions. If you're if you've been in a post-game locker room in the last, you know, 5-7 years in the era of social media, almost inevitably, right? There's the 10-minute cooling down period, whatever it ends up being. Media goes in before guys get dressed. Often before they shower, sometimes before they take off their uniform, you see guys at their locker, hunched over, elbows on the knees, just looking down at the phone. And it's not always checking the text from the wife or the parents congratulating them on the game. It's often scrolling through, reading their Instagram comments, reading their mentions, because if they scored a touchdown, they're getting 10,000 people thanking them for their fantasy football team. If they fumbled the football and lost the game, they've got 10,000 people mad at them for losing the game and losing the bet. It's the vast majority of athletes read their mentions, no question.
Man. Got to develop a pretty thick skin real fast, because it can get really nasty. You know, several people implying, yeah, you don't want to face Luis Castillo, and you know, want to just stand on top of the dish against this guy. You know, just a lot of keyboard muscles were at it. Nothing, you know, and we see it all the time. We see it when we're doing the show, and you know, for me, it rarely is the case when it upsets me. I think since we've been working together, Danny, one time I've been rattled by something that was said by somebody anonymously. But that stuff, especially when you've got hundreds of thousands of followers, and I don't know how many followers Anthony Rizzo has. I don't even know if I'm among them, because Shep sent us the text a short while ago, is where I noticed it while we were waiting to get on the air here.
878,000 followers for Anthony Rizzo. And he's not that active on he's more active on Instagram than he is on Twitter. So he's and it's that's just the power of celebrity, right? And yeah, that completely changes the game in terms of the feedback you get when it gets to that level. But just, I'm assuming Anthony Rizzo is one of the leaders of the team. He's echoing a sentiment shared by many of his teammates, like, hey, what the hell are we waiting around here for? We're on the road, we're in a pandemic, and you're going to just have us sit in an enclosed clubhouse for hours and hours on end. So I imagine the Cubs are getting relatively frustrated about this, but hopefully they're right, and the radar clears up. And they can get it in. By the way, speaking to go back to the beginning of the conversation about movies, last night, Steph goes, you know, I want to watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood again. I'm like,
oh,
you've only seen it the one time. Like, I've had the late night spin through on HBO, and I feel like I've seen it five times from my conversation with Max. So I've got that to look forward
to. Did you quiz her on the dog food?
I did.
I did it. I'm like, I go deep on this movie, despite the fact that you and I have only seen it together one
Steph,
time.
Steph, you think you like this movie, huh? Well, let me ask you a little bit of movie trivia here, Steph.
That's exactly. Good pillow talk. But she's like, I think I'm ready to watch that movie again. I really enjoyed it. I'm like, very different lives.
You have a good friend whose 14-year-old daughter has become a student of it. And I said, all right, hit her with this. I gave her the dog food trivia question. She got 2 out of 3.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's like, man, she must watch over and over again. Well, yeah, you know, I'm always ready for it, especially the first 2 hours of it. It just it tickles me. It really does.
You say your friend's 14-year-old daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I just say the Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt, you know, epic movie is the movie that she's watched over and over again. That's good. That's very astute. I don't know what my level of movie trivia was at 14. It was probably I could have told you like what Seabass's hat said in Dumb and Dumber.
Right.
And like that, those were the types of movies that I was locking in on.
Sure.
At that age, it's a pretty high class movie, honestly, for a 14-year-old to obsess over. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I don't think I was getting into Tarantino at that age, but we think this game's getting in. You want to put on your meteorology hat for me, Mac?
I have no idea.
Okay, yeah. That's
I've already got action on the contest tonight, so I'm content to leave my action there.
Wake up and see if you won the bet. And Shep has bets in the show pot for us, so there's always baseball action.
Yeah, Shep's always moving on something.
Which is, I mean, don't you feel proud? You got to feel like a proud radio dad there. You turned him into a sports gambler in that way.
I don't know if I certainly didn't have any influence on him with baseball. He came up with a system several years ago with baseball that has been pretty effective for him. But, you know, just as I have done with anybody who's on the show, that's our show pot money. As long as people are responsible with it and, you know, you don't go make huge-ass plays and then lose them without covering it. He's made a few $25, $30 plays here and there, and I think he's won more than he's lost or right around there. But if it provides content for us between 2 and 6, I'm all for it. So
heck yeah, it's all you can it's all you can ask for. But that's what I'm saying. Like the keys to the big show pod and whatever it's at right now, $1,900. That's that's a lot of $25 baseball bets. So we're hanging out until 6 o'clock. Then Joe Ostrowski's going to take over. Then Zach Zaidman will come back on for Cubs pregame whenever we get a time for a first pitch. So keep it locked right here, the home of Cubs baseball, 670 The Score.
Rizzo drives one in the air to deep right field. He may have just done it. This ball's got a chance. Gone. Rizzo, a hanging breaking ball, drives one over the wall and right. It's his third home run on the young season. It is his 18th career home run at the Great American Ballpark. And the Cubs have added the extra point and lead 7-0.
A bit of a rain delay. Cubs and Reds are a postponement as the game will be played at some point tonight. At least that's the plan as of now. We just don't know when. So Zach Zaidman will take over when we do, but Joe Ostrowski will be with us at 6 o'clock. It's Mac and Parkins on The Score. Anthony Rizzo's continued to tweet, Mac, from the Cubs clubhouse. His first tweet, hey, at Reds, when do you think a window is? Asking for some friends. Maybe check Home Depot for one with a picture of the weather map over Cincinnati showing all rain. But now he's directed his social media presence towards Major League Baseball. Player safety, ? At MLB. Let's sit around for 8-plus hours inside the clubhouse. I'm sure I could find that somewhere in the 113-page player safety protocol.
He's right.
Pissed, man.
He's right. Well, they should be upset. I mean, if you know, we've all been looking at this all day, and it's like, what in the world are they thinking about even giving it a try for? The area is just covered in a big glob of green radar. It's going to rain there all night, and I don't know. Maybe somebody's playing the role of Carl Spackler and said, I don't think the heavy stuff is going to come down for a little while yet. I have no idea, but. It's silly and it does put the players at risk, but you know, if you're going to say that, if you're going to point, you got to point the thumb too. And you know, Cubs players. And again, this is not me being judgmental. This is by being observational. No baseball team that I have seen play this year has been very, very diligent about following that 113-page protocol. No, nobody's been doing, I shouldn't say nobody, but a lot of people have been violating that. They've not been vigilant at all about not touching each other, about not spitting, about not distancing themselves, nor have they been wearing masks on occasions when they are around other human beings. So
it's not consistent. Some are, some aren't. The managers seem to be, the coaches seem to be, the umpires were. We've seen moments where, you know, there were arguments, right, between, it was the Pirates game with the manager and the umpire, and they, like, both put on their mask before they came out to yell at each other from 5-6 feet away. Like, they're in some places, I think that there have been high-profile attempts, right? We've seen guys change and adjust on the fly. Chris Bryant didn't do it in the Milwaukee series. Then when he was on the bases in the Red series, did put the mask on. So
had some trouble with it, too. He was having trouble with it. Not used to being on first base, maybe. That's
right. It's been a while.
Go ahead. Pile on, Mr. Wonderful.
This is my base running mask. This is new. How does it fit?
I've only needed this 3 times this year.
But what has struck me from the COVID side of baseball has been how much this is just. So the 113-page protocol was apparently just written in pencil, and just the ability to adjust on the fly. Like, the Marlins playing that game by group text player vote is not in the protocol, right? Like, the what are the Phillies going to do where they now have more games scheduled than off days? Well, glad you asked. Ken Rosenthal and Jason Stark reporting, the MLB and the union are making progress on a deal that would allow for doubleheaders consisting of 2 7-inning games would be just for this season. Parties believe more doubleheaders will be necessary as schedule adjusts. Idea is to preserve pitching. So that rule to me makes a ton of logical sense. I find it wild that in the months we had leading up to this, there was no how is that not already agreed upon? If you need to play a doubleheader, do it as 7-inning games instead of 9-inning games.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild. Like, good rule, glad they made it, but how was that not already part of the protocol? Doubleheaders had to have been expected. That's why the Cubs have no day games in case they need to build in doubleheaders into the future.
It's a good question, and it's one I don't have the answer to. You would have expected that to have been part of the dialogue. Look, that document baseball issued, apparently they were merely suggestions, and there's no repercussions to any violation of anything in it. That appears to be what's happened to me, because I've not read, I've not seen, I've not heard anybody talking about baseball being punitive to anybody who violates any of that stuff. In fact, members of management, when I say management, I'm talking about field managers, Don Mattingly and David Ross, both have been, Ross admitted, and I give him credit for being honest about it, but, you know, with that comes criticism on the back end. When he admitted to hugging Kyle Hendricks after his complete game shutout on opening night last Friday night, that's the sort of thing that was mentioned in those 113 pages that was written there for a reason. It wasn't right. Just for somebody to exercise keyboard muscles or because they had nothing better to do with their time. There's a reason they come up with all of these things, and situations don't dictate violation of it. Well, Ross said a few days later, people don't understand how emotional we get sometimes in this game, and I've known Kyle for a while. That's great, you know. You've known your mother-in-law for a handful of years. I'm sure you would have been great to be up close and personal in your week spent in Kansas City, but there are times that call for restraint and refraining from what's typical. That's just reality.
I agree with you completely. Why have the protocol if there is no consequence to not following it? Let me present a devil's advocate to you. Just, they have been in crisis mode since it started. They already have an outbreak. Five of the 30 teams have already had schedules altered because of it. And by the way, they're actually doing, on the whole, a pretty good job, right? The vast majority of teams have not had a positive test once the season has started by a player. The vast majority of it seems to actually be going very well in the very early going, but they do have an outbreak that has impacted a huge percentage of the league already, and clearly they're adjusting with rules on the fly, right? Like Jeff Passan had a report last night about new protocols that are going in place at the hotels on the road. Like they basically have a coronavirus hallway monitor to be sure that the players stay in on a curfew. Like they're adding things as they go that I honestly wonder if they started being punitive to players for spitting or for not wearing a mask when they come back from, hitting a home run and celebrating with their teammates in the dugout. If it would just, the players are like, hey, we're doing a lot here. We're being tested. We're dealing with all of these protocols. We're doing our best. We're the ones risking it so you can make all this money. And now you're going to what? Suspend us? Fine us? Like, I just honestly don't know if they have the manpower and the stomach to start punishing these guys in the middle of a pandemic who, for the vast majority of them, like honestly 99%, are doing their best and being successful at it.
That's when the field manager needs to be wearing big boy pants. What's that?
So you're saying like the in-house, like David Ross could punish his players and not come from having
Come
from Major
League have got to treat these guys like they're caught. You can't be one of the boys. You have got to set an example, and you can't be the one initiating hugs or initiating any contact. You have to be the one who's attempting to dissuade people from doing that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that that's totally reasonable. I just think David Ross's mentality, as the former player who understands the emotions of the game and has his team, by the way, pretty damn locked in. Like, they're creating a buzz and energy and atmosphere without any energy or atmosphere from the ballpark that I could see why, given that his charge is to win as many games as possible, that he doesn't have that higher up on his priority list. Even though I'm totally with you, it should be. It just, I think that's why it's happening. And who knows, maybe there's some sort of kangaroo court that we're just not aware of. That'd be a good question to ask. I know we have Jed Hoyer on the show Friday, so he wouldn't be the perfect guest for it. But maybe the next time Bernsie has Ian Happ on, or with Lawrence with David Ross, like, have there been violations? Like, have you seen guys do X, Y, or Z thing, and did they have to put $500 in a jar in the clubhouse somewhere? You know, I have no idea if they're policing themselves and then just not telling the media. That's possible, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a reasonable question for us to ask Jed Hoyer tomorrow afternoon. We're going to have Steve Stone cover the south side of town. Jed Hoyer will cover the Cubs for us tomorrow. Do we have times on their appearances locked
4
in?
4 o'clock hour back-to-back, 4 and 4:30.
Very, very cool. Yeah.
Laundry is a highlight.
Laundry is a highlight. Laundry has been a highlight in my life of late. When laundry is your toughest assignment of the day, that's a good day. That really is a good day. And what a good night the White Sox had last night. I want to celebrate it one more time for a couple of minutes, if you don't mind
please.
The indulgence, because it felt like it was mid-September last night and their backs were against the wall. And maybe they were. Several players intimated afterward that it was a must-win game. Ozzie joked about it in post-game with Chuck Garfine on NBC Sports Chicago, and it was a great pitching performance by both starters. Zach Plesac of the Indians was terrific, striking out 11 and had great movement and was attacking hitters, getting ahead in the count, something, you know, Alex Colome did not do very well last night when he came in to close for the Sox. Fortunately, the Sox got 4 in the ninth, a couple of sac flies followed by Luis Robert with a two-run single up the box. And Colome comes in for a 31-pitch ninth inning. Doesn't get the save because it was a four-run differential. But Cleveland hitters were tough against him. It was an exciting game. It was edge of the seat theater, like it was in the middle of a playoff race. And they're 6 damn games into this thing. And you knew it wasn't going to be an easy start against Minnesota and Cleveland, and it sure wasn't. So to get out of Cleveland with one of those three felt pretty fortunate the way Plesac was going last night through 8.
Yeah, he was ridiculous with the 11 strikeouts through 8 innings. His slider made some guys look silly who are otherwise very good hitters, who as soon as he got out of there put together a great inning in the ninth, starting with Tim Anderson's double.
Yeah, and after after Anderson's double, sorry guys to interject here, but it's a perfect spot for me to talk about this. We didn't talk about it the first time earlier in the show, but the stones on Johan Moncada to draw that walk there in the top of the ninth inning after Anderson's double, when Dan Iasonia's zone was a little all over the place all night and on a full count, and Moncada just watches that pitch go just below the zone, you know, not relying on the umpire to make or break the at-bat, but he's like, you know, I'm not swinging at this. It's not a strike. And then he draws the walk, and that really changes the dynamic of the whole inning there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it was just one good at-bat after the other, honestly.
He should have rung him up. I thought
he
it
could have,
clo-
like,
yeah.
Judging by how he was ringing people up all night, like that I could have seen it going either way. Yeah. But for, you know, the conviction, just be like, no, this is not my pitch. I'm not going to swing at it.
And when Stone tomorrow to explain himself on that particular pitch, he said, well, you watch it home on the replay, and I know it looks like a strike, but it's not. help us with that, because it was like right at field level, wasn't it, when they showed that replay, and he made that comment? I know you're watching it home, and it looks like a strike, but I promise you it's low. Okay.
I'd love to know how he knows. Yeah, that's also a very good question.
Mac, how many Cy Youngs have you won in your
life? Right.
Because he also is watching on a monitor at Sox Park.
Correct.
The same monitor, likely.
Well, it's a tough line with Moncada, too, right, Tanny? I mean, like, his thing was,
yes,
he was trying to take the walk, have the perfect eye, the perfect understanding of the strike zone, and then he had way too many backwards Ks, like strikeouts.
But last year he put it all together and he knew
exactly,
you know, he was getting, he was a little more aggressive earlier in the count, but still, he didn't lose that eye. You know, he didn't, you know, take that 2017 bad year, 2018 bad season, and you know, change his approach or change, you know, he knows he's got a good eye for the strike zone. So I love that he's still standing by his convictions, and that's going to be a tool that's going to serve him well throughout his entire career.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's got a great eye. He's other than Luis Robert, he's the most fun guy to watch bat. Eloy has the natural power, but Moncada, it feels like it could be the home run, a great at bat, a triple. Like, watching him run the bases is incredible. It's just it's a scary lineup. Like, we were talking about, what do you do with Tim Anderson, the guy who led the league in batting average last year, but Robert, Moncada, Eloy, Encarnacion, Abreu, Madrigal, Grandal. You could say a lot of names that you could make an argument for that you trust to have a better professional at bat than Tim Anderson. That is like the highest of high class problems.
Yeah, it is a good problem to have. And you know what's also exciting, and I don't remember feeling this way about too many guys historically, because usually your closer, when you trust your closer, is the most exciting component of your bullpen. But Aaron Bummer is a freak show. And watching him get the movement he was getting last night at 97 miles an hour was just a thing. I mean, they were guessing up there. He had them so off balance. That was just fun.
Yeah, it was. Best relief pitcher in Chicago, right?
Yes.
Take him over.
Yeah,
Colum
I don't have to
A.
think too long about that. I know we've got three more minutes to go, but
right, you're right.
Yeah, if there's an obvious answer, it's the obvious answer. But there's, who would you say second?
Colum A.
Colum A?
Yeah.
How far do you have to go to get to a Cub?
That's a real good question.
All right, I found a good question.
Do we trust Steve Cishek more than we trust Jeremy
Jeffress?
Jeffress. Yeah. I have to really concentrate on that one.
Yeah, and I still will take Kyle Ryan over Jeffress. Like, Jeffress has more explosive stuff, but maybe it's just because Jeffress had his best work outside of a Cubs uniform, and it's been a couple of years since his best. Like,
right.
He's had highs and lows, but he clearly has staying power as a relief pitcher. Kyle Ryan's been pretty consistent since he's been in the big leagues with the Cubs. So I haven't seen him fail for a prolonged stretch. So I trust him. Not that I necessarily think he has closer stuff, but like, when he's in the game, I'm like, oh, There's probably going to be weak contact. He's probably not going to walk anybody. The guy knows what he's doing up there. Like, he's a professional, reliable relief pitcher. And it's so sad how low of a bar that is for a team that has the payroll that the Cubs do.
Exactly. To the texter who asks if I've been watching any of the NHL tune-up games, the answer is no. Did not watch any tune-up games. But, yes, I am excited. He asked that question, too, about the NHL playoffs. The Blackhawks were gifted an opportunity to get an entry into a 24-team NHL tournament. And with hockey, anything can happen. If the
Blackhawks lose, they fall in Game 1 to the Oilers of this epic five-game play-in series.
If the Sox cap-wearing Corey Crawford gets hot, that could be a good thing. You know, Edmonton is a very, very skilled hockey team. So my hopes aren't set very high for the Blackhawks, but it's hockey. Puck luck here or there, they could win that thing. And if they do, all bets are off because it's hockey and there's been a real long layoff and the Blackhawks have a pretty decent combination of young skilled players with grizzled veterans, some of whom still are playing at a very high level, including Patrick Kane. So we get a chance this weekend to watch Patrick Kane play playoff hockey. There could be worse scenarios we could be confronted with this weekend.
That'll do it.
As you were doing your hockey analysis and you said, and they have a couple of good, I was like, say netminders. Say netminders, but you went with young players. Also accurate, but it just reminded me that we had
the only question I had were your netminders.
Netminders.
And any day we can talk to Terry.
Yeah, Terry's good.
Yeah, it's good. And I'm glad he said that he was down, and now he's coming out of it. He's feeling better. It must be, you have health issues, and there's a pandemic, and you can't get back to your spot in Florida. That must be tough. So I'm glad he's on the come up a little bit.
I got to go check on my boys in the backyard and see how hammered they are. We got back here from the golf course at around 1 o'clock today, 1:15. I'm going to have to put some coffee on for those boobs.
I mean, you're a great host.
Too many beers.
Both radio and as a friend. You just have your buddies over in their pool for 4 hours while you're working. What's on the menu tonight? Barbecue, you said?
We're getting barbecue from down the street. We're going to get some ribs and some brisket and some baked beans.
Sounds incredible. And then the mango and rum. Kicking it old school. Or no, pineapple and rum.
Malibu rum and pineapple juice, yes.
Oh, man. Enjoy. I haven't had one in a long time. You've made me thirsty over the course of today's show. There's nothing wrong with a man liking a sweet drink. Frozen daiquiris, margaritas, rum and pineapple, whatever it is.
I'll make you one next Friday if we do the show here.
All right. I'm in. And I'm in for the show. If we get clearance from Mitch, I'm in. Cleared it with the wife. I'm in, hopefully for golf as well. Thank you again to Herb and Tanny and Shep and everybody. Joe Ostrowski coming up. Then they'll pass the baton back to Zach Zaidman if they actually get this thing in. For the second time, for Dan McNeil, I'm Danny Parkins. We are McNeil and Parkins. This is The Score.
Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Richard Kimball doesn't feel well, obviously. So if you just go on with your dessert and coffee, Richard, do you mind to step aside and let's talk?
All right, it's all over, folks. Let's just stay calm.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.